Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the Metaphysical Hour. Tonight is, it's Friday, and it's November the 18th, 2016. And tonight we'll be doing a special show. I've got Suzanne Spooner here with me. Hi, Suzanne.
Hi, Julia. Thanks for having me.
Oh, absolutely. I love when you're on with me because we just have a good old time. So, yeah. We have a special topic we want to discuss tonight, so we're going to be on doing that tonight. But before we do, I'm going to give out the call-out number or the call-in number. So if anybody wants to call in, you can do so. And it is 1-888-627-6008. Also, before we start, I'll just let you know we have some classes coming up in January. Will be our next QHHT live classes. They'll be here in Eureka Springs, Arkansas. And we have several. See, we have level 2 and 3 and the level 1Cs. And we have some, and we're doing the new thing with the level 2. We're streaming that live. So that'll be an exciting new adventure that we're doing. So that's going to be fun. And then we're having, we always have the online classes. They're always available for the level 1. And then we'll, in April, will be our next ones here, and we'll have the same ones, I believe. But you can go online. Yeah, don't bank on my memory on all of this, because I'm everywhere doing these. Because in March, I'll be in England doing classes as well. So just go online to our websites to check out the classes to see if there's anything happening in your vicinity. But like I said, we always have level 1 classes happening near you. And then now, if you want to take a level 2 class, we're making that so it's more convenient for you as well by doing the streaming of the class. So the websites are DoloresCannon.com or QHHTOfficial.com. So go on there and you can find out when everything is coming up and all of our events, because we have conferences coming up as well in April and in June, our two different conferences, the UFO conference and the transformation conference. All exciting things happening. Very exciting. So just come on. check us out. All right. So for tonight, what we wanted to do was talk about something a little bit different, and that's my father. Because if you don't know, if you you know, a lot of times people, you know, they've heard of Dolores Cannon, and they think that, well, one, they think, okay, she's always been the way she, you know, way they know her, and this great master and doing everything that she, that they know her for, and the great regression, you know, hypnotherapist. And, what I want to do tonight is take us back in time to the beginning and to where everything started and how it all began. And if you don't know, it all started with my father, who was the original hypnotist. And so, yes, we had not one but two hypnotists in the family. Now, how often does that happen? So I was, you know, I and my other three siblings were very lucky. We grew up in a very interesting household, I must say. So anyway, that's how all this began. And I think, you know, that's kind of how he was. He was a very unassuming person. He was not one for the limelight. And so that's kind of how it happened. But I don't want him to be ever lost, because he's the one that really started everything. And, you know, none of this would be here if it weren't for him. Because there's several points in everything all along the way that he did some things. And I, you know, if he wouldn't have been here, or if he would not have done these things, you know, none of this practice, none of these things would be here. And that's just amazing. So you, to think how much influence one person has, you know, and then he doesn't ever take the limelight for it. So that's where I want to, it's kind of like a tribute to my father tonight is Johnny Cannon.
I think that's so interesting, Julie, because I, you know, not everybody is aware, you know, how she began with this. And, you know, I've teased you before that, with all those hypnotists in your family, I wonder as a child if, you know, you weren't hypnotized a lot of the time. You will go clean your room. You will enjoy it.
Probably was.
That might be the next new parenting wave.
really. Because he learned this earlier on. And then, by the time that I was old enough where I was realizing it, because my mom was doing it with me, I was old enough to realize it. And then I was like, you can't do that with me. I'm not one of your clients. So not okay. But yeah, he and she probably very much so did that. and you know, who knew? I just know he had an effect. Like I said, he was just this quiet sort, and maybe many people's fathers were like this. I mean, mom was the more vocal one. If she wanted things done, she kind of had to keep after us to do it. But daddy, and that's how I refer to his daddy, he just had to say it once.
Yeah. Funny how that happens.
And there were times, you know, if you ever did anything wrong, if and I know I've talked to my siblings too, and many of them feel the same way. But with me for sure, I feel like, if I did something wrong, so there's something about, we always want the approval of our father, I think is how it is. And all he ever had to do, I mean, he didn't have to spank me. I don't remember ever getting spanked by my father. All he had to do was say, Julie. And it was just like, oh my gosh, my whole world just ended. It was like, please beat me. Just beat me. It'd be better than that. Just something, anything.
Just a little disappointment was enough to throw you over the edge.
That was it. Yeah, that was the end of my world. And so that could have been some conditioning.
Yeah, there you go.
So anyway, that's but that was just, you know, that was just, he was just very, you know, like a calm, cool mannered. Just, I said, you know, I'm not going to tell you again. That kind of thing. So,
well, he was in the military too, right? So he probably had some of that.
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely. It was very much the, we're raised with the, and this very much is the regimen of a place for everything and everything in its place.
Oh Lord. I went to military.
Yes, exactly. I mean, so it's, everything is regimented. I mean, you know, it's organized. It's, you know, that's not to say that I am now, but but I still have that in my head. It's like, and I don't move things very often, and I bet that's wise, because no, that's the place for that thing.
Right. Oh my gosh, isn't it crazy how that gets ingrained in us?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, but that was his thing, is there's a place for everything and everything in its place. Just the way it is. So, but yes, we were raised military. He was in the service for, it was over 20 years. And we moved around very often. We usually weren't in a place more than 2 years. And sometimes we had very little notice that we were moving. And so that's a different lifestyle.
Yeah, for sure. Oh my.
It's there are pros and there are cons to it. You know, there's, I mean, you have to find a pro.
Right.
You know, I just remember when we moved here to Arkansas, that was the strangest thing. Because before that, every place we had lived was military areas for the most part. It was, we were around other military people and children like ourselves who were used to this. You know, we'd be in military areas and we might be with in a public school where there were what they call civilians. You know, there's us and them, you know, but still you're kind of mingled together. But you would still be with people that knew your situation, that were in your same situation. Well, this was the first time when we moved here that we were completely in a different thing. And here we are now in an area where people are living where they were born. And it was they barely moved. I mean, they barely traveled out of, you know, they might have traveled 10 miles away or something. And it was like, and to move, you know, from one place to another was a completely foreign idea to them, let alone go to another country, you know? So it was like, and to us, it was like, you've lived here all your life. I don't, that was a foreign idea. You know, how do you do that? So it was, yeah, it was very interesting.
So that must be where you and your mom had the capacity to go all around the world, and you know, it, that was natural.
Probably so. We just had that wander bug.
Yeah. Thank goodness.
Yeah, it just, yeah, it makes it where you can just do that. You can just keep going, and you have that desire or that. Maybe it is an ability, but to mix or to adapt to new environments and cultures. And for me, it's always a curiosity. You know, I love to see new areas. And mom, oh, it was fascination for her. She absolutely loved it. So yeah, it's always, I love to see how other people live and. Like you got to see in China this year. See, that's always fun to do, to see things different like that. You know, so it's, yeah, it's very, it is fun. It's different. So anyway. So this was, this book, Five Lives Remembered, was the book that mom wrote about how everything started and their first, this client that they had. And just, it's like this whole story. And what we wanted to do tonight was read some excerpts out of this book. So if you haven't read it, it'll give you some taste of the book and some of the story. And if you have read it, it's always fun to hear it again because, I mean, I hadn't read it in a while, and I was just totally absorbed in it, just preparing, you know, before the show. And so it's always fun to read and to hear again. You know, and plus it's, you know, I just, these stories are fascinating in here. I've just always loved them.
You know, what, this is one of my favorite books of hers. And, you know, what I love is because you really get, she was so good at putting your father's personality into what she wrote about in the sessions with this lady. And, I mean, you really felt like, you know, Johnny and, you know, what a trailblazer he was to, you know, in the midst of this woman going into a past life unexpectedly, you know, just rolling with it. And, you know, that's amazing.
Exactly. And that's why we like to do this so much is, because that's why we have this, like we said, we recommend it actually for the practitioners is so they can see like how everything started. And then also how you can roll with it when you get something unexpected like that. And also like, so they can see where mom started, that it wasn't, you know, it wasn't her, you know, and where she started by holding the microphone really and taking notes, you know, and this is how she learned. So
can I ask a question? This has always been a curiosity question to me.
Sure.
When at this time, when he was starting, you know, doing hypnosis for habits, do you think the topic of past lives, had that come up anywhere on their radar yet?
Well, when we read this first chapter, they're saying that they'd heard a little bit about it, but not enough where they had, it was just kind of in the background. It's just a little bit, and that was it.
Okay.
Yeah. It wasn't anything in the mainstream at all. It was just a little bit out there. So, it looks like we have someone on the line here. We have Zach. So, we can go ahead and talk to him, and then we'll go to our excerpts here. Hi, Zach. Are you there?
Hi. I just wanted to ask a quick question.
Sure.
Well, I was just wondering if Dolores Cannon's work, you know, like if she knew anything about astral projection.
If she used astral projection, is that what you're saying?
If she knew about it.
Oh, she knew about it?
If she knew anything about it. Like, did that come up at all in her work?
She knew about it. It was it was one of those things in the beginning, kind of what everybody does when they're first exploring. I think it's one of the things that everybody does to try. And kind of in the beginning of metaphysics. And then once she got into all of this and she was really exploring, and she was doing all of the hypnosis and the quantum healing, it was like, it was doing all of the things. And so she wasn't doing that herself. I mean, I think she did it earlier when she was, cause she was part of a metaphysical group and she was doing metaphysical, studies and things like that. And I think that's, they were doing things like that. Cause I know I went through similar things and she knew about it, but you know, specifically knowing what she did, I don't remember, but yeah, she knew about it. Yes.
Oh, well, I've been trying to do it for like, I don't know, like 3 years or something. I don't even know anymore, but I just, haven't even been able to get close to being able to do it. Like, I haven't even almost hadn't like an out-of-body experience yet, and I'm kind of frustrated, and I was hoping I don't know either you or someone could help me or whatever. I don't know.
Well, actually they're saying both of us can, and right off the bat they're saying that you're trying too hard, because you do it naturally every night when you go to sleep, you automatically do it, and so and it's just you're trying so hard. And if you'll just let go and allow, because you already know what to do, you're just doing something that's making it that's actually stopping yourself from it happening. And I know that's probably I don't know if it's making any sense to you, but it's the trying too hard that's making it happen. Suzanne, I know you can probably help explain that better.
Well, I think I totally get that, because I've been there, and so I understand. I think what you're asking about. I think sometimes helping yourself get into that deeper theta state, you know, doing some even guided meditations, just allowing the left brain, the conscious mind, to just relax, would be helpful. And maybe you already do that. I don't know, but, that helps me, you know, to kind of get out of that analytical side and, open up to the other side. You know what just popped into my head? This is really funny. I don't know if there's any places like this around you, but have you ever tried one of those flotation tanks?
No, none of those places are near me.
Okay, well, you might Google that and just see, because they're kind of popping up all over. And those, you know, it kind of takes that sensory stuff away. And I have known friends that have had really interesting experiences in those flotation tanks.
Yeah, I've heard of those. I'm pretty sure those are relatively new, though, aren't they? I don't know.
I don't know. I live in Des Moines, and we've got a place here that has been open for a little over a year, I think. But I think, like, in Chicago and Minneapolis, they've been around for a while now. You might be surprised. There might be some that are not too far away.
All right. Well, yep. I guess that's all I can pretty much ask about that. You know, I guess I'll try to be more relaxed. I don't know.
Yeah, love. It's just stepping out of your own way. It's just allowing it and just letting go. Like she said, it's just, I know it's hard at first to kind of know what that means, but it's letting it. It's that conscious mind it's like it wants it so bad. It wants it so bad, but it's the one that's actually holding on. Because it wants it so bad, it's holding on and it's keeping it from happening. so it's the one that needs to let go. Pardon?
So I should not want it so bad?
Yeah, actually kind of get to a place where you don't care. You know, and it's like, just be, you know, just relax with it and just let it go and just allow. And just let the... And just kind of take a play. Let's just play with this attitude. Let's just, you know, it's a game. Let's just play and see what happens and take that attitude. And then the conscious mind kind of takes a step back or takes a step to the side and it moves out of the way and it allows the other part to do what it can do and what it needs to do to make the process happen. Okay.
Does the same thing apply for lucid dreaming, or are those the same thing? I've heard a lot of controversy between they're the same thing, they're not the same thing, and, you know, there's a lot of debate that I've noticed going on, you know. So is there really, truth? Are they the same thing, or are they not the same thing?
I don't think they're the same thing. Lucid dreaming is, they might. Could be, I guess. I don't know. It could be just semantics. I just know it's just lucid dreaming is all of a sudden when you become aware within your dream that you're dreaming. And then you can start controlling the dream. So that's where the astral traveling, you are actually leaving your body. Your soul is, you're leaving it there and you're leaving and going off. So see, see how they're kind of different? So
I've had a few lucid dream experiences.
Pardon?
They're pretty few. I've had a few lucid dreaming experiences, but they're pretty few and far between. They're kind of rare for me.
Mm-hmm. And they're really strange, aren't they? I mean, they're so cool because it's usually me at the point that I realize when I get to that point, oh, this is a dream, and then you start manipulating it, then that's the point I wake up. And it's like,
Oh, yeah, that happens a lot. The strange thing that I've noticed is that every time I have a lucid dream, I'm always standing somewhere near my house, either in front of my house or, beside my house. And that's usually when I get so aware that I'll usually wake up at that point and then I'll get disappointed.
Okay, well, see, now that may be why you're thinking, oh, it's the same as astral traveling, because that could be what you were doing, is you were just out of the body, and you're just now coming back, and you're waking up before you're fully back.
Yeah.
Into the body.
I personally don't know, I don't know if they're the same thing or not, because, you know, I guess I can't really, you know, make any judgments on, you know, they're the same thing or not, because, you know, I've never experienced, you know, the other thing, so I wouldn't know, so...
I think it's two segments of an orange, you know, it's it's different, but it's all connected to consciousness, you know, just a different experience of it.
Yeah, that's a good way of saying it. I agree. Yeah.
Yeah. It's so great.
Just have fun with it. You know, it's all okay. Just explore and just, you know, enjoy it and see where it takes you. whatever happens.
Yeah, it feels great whenever it happens, but, you know, I'm always disappointed whenever it's over.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's like, oh, I'm going to go back. And you're just like,
Yeah. It does sort of like this feeling that, like, whenever you're in the dream and then you realize that you're dreaming, it's sort of like, I don't know how to describe it. I haven't had too many, but I can remember all of them, like, clearly. And it just, the one thing that I can remember about all of them, it just makes you feel like, I don't know, like, alive. It's like this buzzing feeling, I don't know.
You might enjoy, you know, looking in your area as well for a QHHT practitioner and having a session. Because that's a really nice way of exploring your consciousness as well, you know, and you could ask yourself questions about that and let your own subconscious or high self answer those questions.
Yeah, I've thought about doing something like that, but there aren't too many near me. I don't know. They're kind of far away. I've tried emailing a few, you know, no answer, you know. I've done a lot of reading on it, though, you know. Chances are, you know, whatever's on the internet, you know, I've probably read it because, you know, I've done so much research on this. I'm so fascinated by this, you know. I just kind of want to experience it for myself, you know. Mm-hmm. You know, I know that these things are real, you know. I have no doubt that they're not real, you know. I just thought it would be nice to experience it for myself, you know, for once, I don't know.
You know, just keep going, and the universe always brings to you what's right for you. So just keep asking, and you will receive.
Yeah,
see, all right. It's exactly right.
I'll try and be more relaxed. I'm going to try again tonight. Just ask my guide or something to make this happen.
We'll send you some of our mojo. Hopefully that'll get you can have a wild experience in your sleep time.
Yeah.
Yeah, that'd be great. Right,
thank you for helping me.
Yeah. Okay. Well, thank you, Zach.
Thank you.
Good night, and have a great Thanksgiving. Thank you for calling.
Thank you.
Okay. Well, and that kind of goes along. You know, like what I was thinking as you kept talking about that. You know, some stuff that Mom would say in some of the convoluted books, like the dreamer dreams a dream. You know, it's like which, you know, when they would say when we're dreaming, that's actually the real world, and then this is actually the dream.
I think we're doing much more work in our dream state than we are in our waking physical time.
Mm-hmm. And that's why we keep wanting to go back there when we're when we come out of it. It's like, no, I'm going to go back. Because that's the real one. I don't want this one. And we think this is the real one. It's like, no, it's not. That's the real one.
Just the one that we're focused on at this present time.
Right. I liked how you put that, though. Two segments of an orange. It's just two segments, but they're still of the orange. I like that. Mm-hmm. That's good. That's a nice way of putting it.
Thank you.
Very cool. And because it can't, you know, we can get all caught up in these definitions and everything, but they really are. They're just parts and pieces of going to the same area and the same realm. And does it really matter? No.
Probably. No, not at all.
Yeah, exactly. Just do it. It's some way of getting you out of yourself, whatever it is, you know, just get yourself out of the way so that you can explore, you know, who you really are. That's what you're trying to do. So just let ego just step to the side. And so you can go explore.
That's the fun part of our work.
Mm-hmm. It is. So fun. Okay. All right. Well, what I'd like to do is go ahead. And we were wondering if I'm going to read this first chapter. We first wondered if this was too long, but I don't think it is. And we talked about paraphrasing it, but Mom wrote it so nicely, and I really would like to use her words. the way she, it was just so good the way she described everything. So I'd like to go ahead and just go ahead and read directly.
Yeah, I think you should.
Okay. All right, so this is chapter one, Setting the Stage. This book is the story of a hypnotic experiment into the phenomenon of reincarnation. It occurred in 1968 and was conducted by a group of ordinary people. Now that's to say the least, huh?
Yeah.
It was an adventure that was to have a profound effect upon their lives and their thinking for all time. I thought it would do a great deal of good to share what we discovered with others. Others who, like ourselves at the time, were groping for some answers that would make sense out of a chaotic world which, on the surface, seems to have no real answers. What we found has helped some people and startled others. What we found changed our outlook on life and death forever. We can no longer fear death because it is no longer the terrible unknown. I said it was an adventure involving ordinary people, but who really is ordinary? Every creature is created by God and put on this confused, muddled planet and has some unique characteristics that sets them apart from all others. Certainly, there was much about Johnny Cannon that was not ordinary. If our story is to have the credibility it deserves, you need to know something about the people involved and how the whole thing came about. But how can you capsulize a person's life into a few short paragraphs? I will have to try. Johnny Cannon was born in Kansas City, Missouri in 1931 and entered the U.S. Navy as a young man of 17. Even at that tender age, he had a special quality of warmth and friendly concern for others that inspired trust and affection in almost everyone he met. His dark coloring, a legacy from the strain of American Indian blood and his ancestry, gave a striking contrast to his surprisingly bright blue eyes. No picture of Johnny Cannon would be complete without the inevitable cup of coffee in one hand and pipe in the other. Johnny and I were married in 1951 while he was stationed in St. Louis, Missouri. During his 21 years in the Navy, we both saw a great deal of the world. I went with him as much as possible, producing four children along the way. As an air controlman, his job was to monitor the radar scope and talk to the pilots of planes landing and taking off at both airfields and on aircraft carriers. We were stationed at Sangley Point in the Philippine Islands in 1960, when he became interested in hypnotism. In those days, before we were involved in the Vietnam War and before President Marcos took over the country, it was a wonderful place, a wonderful happy place, what the Navy calls a good duty base. There was much leisure time, occasional side trips to many unforgettable places, and a house full of servants. It was a two-year vacation. In retrospect, those were some of the happiest days of our lives. There happened to be another man stationed there who was a professional hypnotist, having been trained at the New York Institute of Hypnology. With so much free time, the man decided to give lessons in hypnotism, and Johnny thought taking the course would be a fun thing to do. But it became a long, involved process spanning about 6 months. Many of the other students lost interest and dropped out. The instructor was concentrating not only on technique, but on all other facets of hypnotism and the subconscious mind. Thus, when one had completed the course, he would be aware of the dangers that could result and how to avoid the pitfalls. The main concern was protecting the subject and not trying to use the method for entertainment. Johnny finished the course and turned out to be very adept at hypnotism, although he had little or no occasion to use it for several years. Other things got in the way, like the Vietnam War. We had returned to the States and were involved in trying to take care of four small children without the help of the servants we had grown accustomed to. Then, unexpectedly, in 1963, Johnny received orders to report to the USS Midway, an aircraft carrier, which was in port at San Francisco, preparing to leave for the Pacific. The orders came so suddenly that we had only 2 days to dispose of our house, pack our belongings, and leave. I was not yet fully recovered from the stillbirth of a baby girl a month before, and this was a double shock. When Johnny arrived in San Francisco, the ship had already left port, and he had to be flown out to it. It was on its way to Vietnam. Thus began 3 years of loneliness and seemingly endless waiting as I tried to raise four children on a limited income without a father. It is a story familiar to all who have been in the service. The carrier was the first to arrive off Vietnam as the war accelerated and the first to drop the bombs. The ship received a citation for shooting down the first MiG jet of the war. After what seemed an eternity, Johnny was home again, and we were stationed at a jet training base in Beeville, Texas. In that hot, arid place, we set about trying to make up for those lost years and their effects on the children. This is where our adventure began in 1968. Oddly enough, it started with the big cigarette scare. Many methods of kicking the habit were tried, and one that proved to be very effective was hypnosis. It didn't take long for people to discover that Johnny could hypnotize, and he began to be very much in demand. There were many who wanted to stop smoking, to lose weight, gain weight, break habits, or learn to relax. We encountered all the normal cases that hypnotism is used for. There was one man who had orders to go to Vietnam and was so upset he couldn't sleep. Johnny tried to help them all. Some offered to pay for his time, but he always refused. I was present at all of his sessions, and it was fascinating to watch him work. Things went along smoothly for several months, and then we met Anita Martin. Anita was a Navy wife in her 30s with three children. We had met her socially, and she and I were active in the Navy Wives Club, but we had never been close friends. Anita was of German descent, blonde and fair, a friendly type of person, and Catholic by faith. She had been going to the base doctor for treatment of kidney problems and high blood pressure, both of which were aggravated by overweight. She couldn't seem to lose weight, and the doctor was having trouble lowering her blood pressure. All of this, combined with several personal problems, had transformed her into a nervous eater. She asked us if we thought hypnosis could help her to relax, relieve the tension, and keep her from eating so much. Ordinarily, Johnny would not handle anything of a medical nature because he knew he was not qualified in that respect. But the doctor knew us, and when Anita discussed with him what she wanted to do, he agreed that it could do no harm and might even help. He would be monitoring the results. When we went to Anita's house for the first time, Johnny was surprised that she went into trance so quickly. He conducted several tests, but she turned out to be one of those unusual persons who can go immediately into a deep trance. She said later that she had always thought she would have no trouble being hypnotized. Thus, she had no mental reservations. This type of subject is called a somnambulist. Johnny worked with her for many weeks, giving her suggestions about relaxing. He gave her suggestions that if tempted to overeat, she would have a mental picture of the girl she wanted to look like, and this would stop her from going to the refrigerator. It all seemed to be working because the doctor reported that for the first time her blood pressure was coming down and her kidneys were improving. Her weight also dropped by a significant amount. Eventually, while Johnny worked with her, her health reached the point of being very near normal. In his attempts to check the validity of her trance, Johnny often regressed her to childhood. On such occasions, we were both deeply impressed by the completeness of her regression. She would become very articulate, talking and talking, going into elaborate detail and requiring little or no prodding. Unlike most hypnotic subjects who require a good deal of questioning to bring out their reactions, she seemed to literally become the child she had been, both in speech and mannerisms. One day she remarked that she had heard of alleged regressions into past lives and wondered if there was anything to the idea of reincarnation. We had heard of such things too, although in the 60s, there were not as many reports as there are today. The idea was still new and startling. The only books we had read at that time, which dealt with reincarnation and hypnotic regressions into past lives, were Morrie Bernstein's Search for Bridey Murphy and The Enigma of Reincarnation by Brad Steiger. Jess Stern's Search for the Girl with the Blue Eyes came out after we had finished our experiment. The many other books on this subject were not to appear until the 1970s. Thus, it was extremely difficult to find anything in book form in 1968 to use as a guideline. We told her we thought the subject was very intriguing, but had not found anyone before who would be willing to try such an experiment. She was curious to see what, if anything, would happen, but we would all be groping in the dark. It would be a first attempt for all of us. Johnny had no instructions on how to proceed or what results to expect. We were moving into the total unknown. We had an excellent tape recorder, a big, cumbersome thing that used large 8-inch reels of tape. It was considered to be a portable, but it was difficult to transport. Thus, this phase of the work was all conducted at our house. When the day came for the experiment, we all were excited and filled with anticipation. Johnny said it was important that he not put any suggestions into Anita's mind, so he was going to be extremely careful of what he said. We had no idea what to expect. That was the way it began, as a curiosity, a one-time thing to experience and discuss later. Little did we realize the Pandora's box we would open up. Really. Okay. The tape recorder was ready as Anita settled into the recliner and went easily and quickly into a deep trance, as she had so many times before. Johnny took her slowly back through the years of her childhood, almost too slowly, deliberately, as if he was afraid to make the jump beyond the knowable and the familiar. First, we saw her as a little girl of 10, talking about a new frizzy home permanent her mother had given her, and about a new word, apostrophe, she had learned that day at school. Next, she was a little girl of 6, who had unwrapped some of her presents under the Christmas tree before she was supposed to, and was now worried about how to wrap them again. Then, as a little girl of 2, playing in the bathtub. Next, a baby of 1 month. "I see a baby in a white crib," she said. "Is that me?" Drawing a deep breath, Johnny said, "I'm going to count to 5. And when I reach 5, you will be back before you were born. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. What do you see?" "It's all black." "Do you know where you are?" he asked. Anita said she did not. He continued, "As I count to 10, we'll travel even farther back. What do you see now?" "I'm in a car," she replied. "What?" That was a big emotional letdown. We had thought if she were to go back into a past life, it would certainly be long before the day of the automobile. But a car? That sounded too modern. Surely we had failed. "It's a big, black, shiny car," she exclaimed. "A Packard, and I just bought it." "You did? What town are we in?" "We're in Illinois. We're in Chicago." "I see. And what year is this?" Anita shifted around in the chair and literally became someone else. "You don't know what year this is?" "Well, silly, it's 1922. We had succeeded after all. We knew she was born into this present life in 1936. So apparently she had regressed into another life, although a fairly recent one. Johnny and I stared dumbfounded at each other. He smirked slightly as he hurriedly tried to think of what to do next. Now that the door was opened, how was he to proceed? Over the following months, we were to invent our own technique and method of procedure as we blazed a trail into the uncharted territory.
Wow. That must have been quite the conversation between the two of them the days after that.
Oh, yeah. yeah, and it became, as you'll read in the book, it became quite a thing as it kept going, you know, and they would keep having sessions. Other people started becoming interested in these sessions, and they would come over afterwards and they would listen to the recordings. So it became kind of a weekly, like a serial, you know, kind of thing.
Right.
Listening to the next saga, you know, what happened next? What happened next? So it was really interesting. Yeah, it's like at that time, you know, I guess him just even being in hypnosis, you know, because we were talking about this before, our family was always kind of into different things. Right. So maybe we were just known for being different. I don't know. So we did different things a lot. Yeah, I wonder, you know, because they seem to be okay with it, you know, until later. You know, then they all kind of turned, and that's told in the book too. You know, this is what you get, ha ha ha. You know, so
yeah.
That was just the times, though. But I really like how, you know, we have to put things into perspective, because a lot of people, you know, especially younger people now, I don't think they fully understand how things were at that time.
Right. Oh, gosh. I mean, just huge trailblazers and following their gut, you know, to proceed, and, you know, society as a whole not understanding or supporting what the work was.
Right. Yeah. There was, and there's nothing there to, I mean, there weren't New Age or metaphysical shops. There weren't books. I mean, there was just those couple of books for the Western world. Now, right. The Eastern world they believed all this, but we didn't have internet then. We didn't have the bookstores where we would have that literature over here. You know, we just didn't have that stuff. It wasn't here. It didn't start trickling in until the 70s. So when this started, there was nothing except their curiosity. You know, so there's like, well, okay, what do we do next?
Isn't that awesome? Wow. I mean, personally, I'm so grateful they, you know, had that curiosity and optimism to explore it. Oh my gosh, it's changed my life.
Well, really? Yeah. And yeah, and mine. And everybody, I mean, just think about everywhere. That's the point. I'm, you know, none of this would be here. None of this. If that hadn't happened.
Well, you know, and I think that's, you know, when you see people, you know, you think of, I don't know, you know, Steve Jobs and Edison or Tesla, you know, it just, you know, I think in those moments, you just go for it, you know, not knowing what's going to happen or not, but why not? And, you know, after it becomes so normal or known, you know, you forget that that wasn't the way it always was. And so this is such a great understanding of the start of it all.
Right. And that's a good point. I remember right toward the end of Mom's life, it wasn't the last class, but close to the last, she was starting to look at where, you know, these classes and these people were coming from all these different countries and just everywhere. Right. And she was just looking at it. She's like, oh my gosh, look what I did. Did I do this? And she was starting to realize, I think she was starting to see, connect the dots a little bit. You know, it's like, did I have something to do with this?
what a humble master.
You know, because she was just doing her thing. That was the thing. That's why I think what you're trying to say is like, you know, they're just doing it. They're just doing what they know to do. Somebody's just doing it. And that's what she was always doing. She was just doing she was just following her love, and she was just doing regressions, and she was just doing what she knew to do, and just kept going for it. And then she was just sharing her information that she was receiving through the books. And then she just started teaching them because they're like, you know, you're only one person. You can't do this all yourself. There's a lot of people that need to be seen. So you need to teach this so other people can do it. And then so she's like, okay, well, I'll figure it out and I'll teach it. And okay, fine. And she started doing that. It's like, so, you know, and that's how it goes. And that's what people do. They don't start out going, I think I'll do this and become this great person. That's not what they do. They're just doing their thing.
Right.
And it just becomes great somehow because they do their thing with a passion.
You know, don't you think, though, that inspiration, that nudge that we get, you know, it comes to the people that, you know, have a good opportunity or chance to take it and run with it, right?
Yeah. You know, they do have me. I mean, it comes probably many people, and a lot of people don't do it, you know, but then there are the people that do go ahead and go.
Well, you know, mm-hmm. That reminds me of a certain author I know who had an idea for a book that wasn't getting on it and was told that they'd give it to somebody else if you wouldn't proceed with it, Julia.
Who are you talking about? But that's right, though. And that's what got me to get it done was when they said, hello, we'll give you 1 year. And if you do not do it, we're giving it to someone else. And I'm like, whoa, they're serious. Okay, I'm listening. I will do it now. I realize then they're not playing. And then it could go to somebody else. It wasn't just mine.
But that sheds a lot of light for many people, probably for everybody to some extent at some point in their life where they get an idea and they get so excited about it, you know, and it's just like it becomes a passion. And, you know, I think that's that. I think that's that spark igniting. And, you know, we have free will. So either we roll for it or we back way. But, mm-hmm. you know.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
At that point, neither one of them had the insight that you had, you know, to really know that what that message was. They just, you know, they just, I guess, followed their interest and their love and had no mm-hmm. idea where it was headed.
Exactly. Exactly. I would like to, real quick, I think I'll just jump to this last excerpt that we have, because this is so beautiful that they had this. And this is the biggest part of our work now, I feel like, is this last one. And they had it back then. And this is another reason that we recommend this book for people to read is because of what they had back then. And it's called, it's chapter 10. It's A Spirit Created. And I'm just going to read a short, it's like a couple of pages from it. During the next session, an even weirder incident occurred when a strange entity emerged. We had decided to try to see how far back in time Anita would go. We wanted to find out how many lives she had lived. We expected to go much farther back than we did. Anita's first life seemed to have been in the 1300s, the early 14th century, as Gretchen in Germany. We had spoken to her before as a spirit form when she was in between lifetimes. But this time it was different. From the moment this new entity began to speak, we knew there was something unusual about it. We called this one the perfect spirit. It had something that is very difficult to describe, an ethereal, haunting, otherworldly quality that was at the same time awe-inspiring and disturbing. The full impact can only be felt by listening to the tape. The voice has a quality all its own, with perfect, carefully pronounced English spoken with a tone suggestive of royalty. Sound familiar? Others have felt this too, that here was something definitely not of this world. It gave us the feeling that we were addressing someone so advanced that she had the answers to everything. She seemed to possess all knowledge. Where have we heard this before? Upon reflection, and probably with the consultation of others more learned than we could have thought of more profound questions, but she came as a complete surprise, and we could only ask what we thought of at that moment. Anything that we might think of to ask in such circumstances must surely appear trivial. This is one of the problems with regressive hypnosis. When you regress a person, you never know what time period they will come into. Only later can you be prepared to ask in-depth questions after doing much research. But alas, this beautiful spirit was never encountered again. Were we allowed for a few brief moments a glimpse of a spirit at its formation, in its beginning state, we didn't know what we encountered then, and we still don't know what we do. Yes. But what we saw was beautiful and wonderful. I only hope that some of the feelings she generated in us can come through in such a poor medium as the written word. All right. Okay, so do you want to do our back and forth that we were talking about?
Yeah, sure.
Okay, in this part, Suzanne's going to play the part of Anita, and I'll play the part of my father. All right. So, okay, Gretchen, I'm going to count to three, and we're going back to the year 1250. Counted. It's the year 1250. What are you doing?
I am a spirit.
What do you see?
I see only what is here that is good. I have never been to Earth.
Well, Johnny apparently either didn't catch what she had said or was unprepared for her answer. Okay, you have just come to Earth?
I have never been there. Ask what you will. What I know, I can tell you. What I don't know is not revealed. I have not learned. I cannot help you, my son. As a spirit, I am happy here.
The voice became filled with authority, the English pure and precise. This personality seemed to know exactly what it was saying, and seemed very superior, but Johnny still didn't understand. And you're just coming back to Earth?
I have never been to Earth, my son. You must have been, because they tell me when you go, you lose knowledge. I will be patient with you.
Well, thank you. Johnny hesitated as he tried to understand what was happening.
I am kind and I am good. I have all virtue.
How long have you been here in the spirit?
Since I was created. I do not know number in years. I was created.
And do you know where you were created?
I know. You mean a name? A name for this place?
Yeah, what do you call this place?
I have no need to call it anything. I simply know that I am here, that all is good and well. I have what I need. I know what I know, and I will do what I am told. But you may call it any word which is good. That will be acceptable to me.
Okay, well, I'm going to count to three, and we're going back to the year 1150. It's the year 1150. What are you doing? Johnny did not realize that she had reached the beginning as far as she was concerned and would go no farther.
I am created, and I wait. I know the goodness now. I was created to please the Creator, and my spirit is good. All goodness. No evil is in me.
How long ago were you created?
Time is not here. Time is not here. Since the beginning of time, I have been created.
Okay. Well, they're calling time on us. So we're going to have to end here. So I'm sorry, everyone. Thank you. And we're going to have to say good night. Thank you all. And we'll see you after Thanksgiving. So have a wonderful Thanksgiving, everyone. Good night.
Good night.